afternoon, sir.
Good afternoon. I wonder if I could get some information from you. I'm a reporter at the Sacramento Bee newspaper, and they give your number down here at the police station to people to call in to report UFOs.
Yes.
At the sheriff's office here, they give a number in Southern California, another place called the UFO Education Center. So anyway, I'm trying to work up a story on who runs the places and so forth. Are you a private outfit? Or
yes, we are.
Yeah, a nonprofit type organization.
Right.
Are you one of the staff there, or are you in charge of it? Or?
I'm on the staff. Yes.
Yeah. I wonder, can you tell me a little bit about it and
sure.
How busy you are and how busy you've been recently, and maybe whether you've got any calls from down in the Sacramento or Northern California area?
Okay. Well, things have been rather quiet, really, for several years, and up until about, night morning before last, I guess,
uh-huh.
when everything broke loose in California. And we had several calls from the Sacramento-Stockton area,
uh-huh.
also from Orange County and Los Angeles County.
Uh-huh.
In fact, our calls were pretty frequent from about 3 a.m. right through to about 7 a.m. that morning. That would be the morning of the 22nd.
March 22nd, uh-huh. Okay. What was it they were reporting? Tell me.
Okay, well, over the Los Angeles and Orange County area, there were two very brilliant objects moving across the sky from southwest to northeast. They were flying in tandem at what was described by some of the helicopter pilots there as about medium altitude, comparing it with aircraft flights. And, they were flying in a horizontal flight trajectory, high rate of speed, and then they just, they didn't fade out, they didn't burn out, they just clicked out, just like turning off a light.
Huh.
And they did not leave a trail like a meteor would.
Huh.
They couldn't really explain it. They said it was quite spectacular. A lot of people saw that. And then up around the San Joaquin Valley area, or San Joaquin County area, around 5:15, there were more reports from police, specifically sheriff's cars, that observed for about 15 minutes two brilliant white objects maneuvering over the Sierra Nevada mountain range.
Huh.
They were not stationary. They were definitely on the move and just moving around, performing some crazy maneuvers and so forth. And we also had another call from the Colusa area, where a couple around 3:23 in the morning saw a huge disc-shaped object ringed with blue lights moving from southwest to northeast. That's about all we had for that particular morning, and then of course, we have a few other scattered reports from around the country, which didn't amount to anything.
What does your center get into interpretation of these things, or do you just log these?
No.
What do you do after you get some information?
No, when we complete the investigation on any case, we evaluate the information, run it through a data reduction system, take that and catalog into the data bank, and then this information is compared with past reports, specifically the unknowns for the past 20 years, to see how they compare. And then, of course, this massive data which is accumulated is used in our various research programs.
How do these recent sightings compare with ones that have been reported in the past? Are they similar?
Well, okay, they come in three different categories. There you got the disc-shaped object, which is fits right into the description category for that particular type object, and then the one in Central California where the two lights were maneuvering around. This is very common. The only problem there is all the witnesses see is a light. They don't see any superstructure of any kind of a vehicle.
Uh-huh.
Then the ones that passed over Southern California, why, This is quite common for rapid overflights, even what we refer to as high flyers, which cannot be or do not fit into the category of meteor flights.
So they all fit into different patterns that have been reported in the past.
Right.
I see. Okay, what do you do with the information after you've broken it down and compared with that past? Is it put to any immediate use? Do you report it to anybody? Or what do you do with the stuff after you've evaluated it?
Okay, well, that depends on the the priority of the type of case. If it's a real close approach case or a landing, why, then we try to get a field investigator in and do all the on-the-spot investigations that they can do. But the data itself is used in, we have constant research projects going. We make a very close study of the behavior pattern of these objects, and specifically in relation to the witness. Then we watch for changes in patterns, such as the type of vehicles that are being seen, where the activity is concentrated, what they might be watching. If they get a heavy rash of reports from a specific area, then we try to determine just exactly what they're doing there, what the purpose is, the type of surface features that they might be checking on, or geological studies of some kind, or are they watching people or certain people. But we try to watch for these patterns. These patterns have formed in the past, and we just watch for repeats is all. It's a little early yet. We're still gathering data. We're searching for more witnesses. But I think that the one up in the northern part of California would fall very well into the UFO category, or we would classify it as an unknown, because the actual vehicle itself was seen.
Okay. Do you get very many of those?
Yes. Yes, we do.
Are you, I wonder if I could ask you just a little bit about the organization or the structure of it.
Sure.
Itself. How are you set up? Are you funded by donations, or where do you get their operating?
No, we have a permanent staff of 12 volunteers, and they foot all the bills. They just split it up. So it's self-funded. We don't have to rely on anyone. There's no strings attached to the organization. We're free to operate in whatever direction we want to go. And these volunteers also man the center and do all the book work and the various research projects.
Well, that's interesting. How long have you been in operation?
Well, the center itself has been in operation for about 2.5 years.
Apparently you've got the word out fairly well as I say, the police down here refer calls to you. Do you know specifically of other police or sheriff's offices that do the same thing in Northern California, such as perhaps Colusa? Is that one of the ones that's on your list? Or?
Yes, we were notified by the Colusa Sheriff's Department. There are a few. We don't know exactly how many, but we know that there are some. We have sent out some literature spot mailings in hopes that, you know, that they would cooperate is all. And that's all we can hope for.
I see. You feel that's what brings the contacts to you?
Right. This is our effort to make contact with the people who have these experiences.
I suppose that's why the county sheriff's office here has people contact the one in Southern California. It's probably just something that came in the mail from them, that they posted it or something else like that. there been, you say it's been really quiet for the last couple of years. Is there, do these things, sightings tend to run in cycles, such as the one you just had several over a 1 or 2 day period? Is that the way things tend to go and then nothing for a while?
Well, off and on, yes. I mean, let me put it this way, there's no marked pattern. We, the last large rash of UFO reports occurred in 73, and it's just been tapering off continuously since then now with periodic spurts of reports here and there, like from California. But when we have what we call a flap condition or a sudden activity which goes on for maybe weeks in a particular given area, why then we keep track of all this and try to see if there's a marked pattern between that and the last one and the previous one and so forth. But we have not found such a pattern, and we don't have an answer as to why it's the way it is. We've tried to compare close planet oppositions and various astronomical positions of solar systems and so forth in comparison to ours, and we just haven't found any marked pattern of any kind. So their reason for coming and going is just completely unknown.
Okay. So one of the things that the people down in San Diego County, Southern California, told me was that they're convinced that these are kind of research flights from other places in space, but they seem to be convinced that these flights are originating from within our solar system. Is that one of the premises you're operating on, or does anybody up there feel that way? Or?
No. Considering the probes that NASA has made into the solar system, we're quite sure that the ports of origin are not from our system. I mean, we could be wrong on this, but we're going by what NASA has come up with, actual data. And so we feel that if they are interplanetary, then they are probably coming from other solar systems, nearby solar systems. And if you really want to get out way out into right field, why, we could even imagine that they would be coming in from other galaxies. Of course, the astronomers, you know, they put up a big fight against such a theory because of the tremendous mileage involved and distances. But our science is very, very young, and who is to say that we will not develop means of travel that could cover those distances in practically no time at all. Sightings have been made for thousands of years, and we feel that there's a constant program being carried on by alien visitors from many ports of origin, and that some may be just flybys and come in just out of curiosity. Others may be conducting constant surveillance of the advancement of mankind on this planet. But we do feel that there is a definite purpose. When they come here, they appear, just by their behavior pattern, to be here for a purpose.
Right.
We have seen in our various research projects that there appears to be various levels of technology involved. We feel that some of the visitors are all more advanced through science and technology than others. We've made a very close study of the various types of vehicles and the types of apparent propulsion systems that they're using, and it's obvious that more are more sophisticated than others.
system that you give a certain amount of credence to it? Is there some way you can verify it? Or how do you determine which calls are strictly based on nothing other than somebody's imagination? And which ones do you tend to put more belief in? In other words, if you get one from an Air Force pilot or something, do you tend to give it a little bit more, think it's a little more substantial than one you might get from somebody who sounds like he's half gassed or something?
Oh, yes, yes. We would naturally give more priority to qualified observers. But this doesn't mean that a farmer out in the country couldn't come up with something just as valid, because when an individual calls in, and within about the first minute or two of that individual describing what they have seen, we can just about tell whether it's a hoax call or not. The descriptions, other just completely outside of the ordinary light descriptions, but when they start describing vehicles and they can see superstructure and so forth, we know what to look for in their description. If they have a very, very good background in the subject of UFOs, then they could perpetrate a hoax without any problem. But we have found that at least 95% of the people that report objects to us are diehard non-believers. They have never had any interest in the subject, and they know nothing about it. When somebody calls up and they've got a quivering voice and they've had hell scared out of them, and they start describing something which that fits right into the category of all the data that we've collected, then we can be sure that the report is valid. And then, of course, this is backed up by field investigators making on-the-spot investigations, too. That might have got a call, well, they'll go to them and check it out. One of the main things is to get as many witnesses to any one incident that we can.
Do you have someone manning your phone there 24 hours a day?
Yes, sir. This phone is answered by one of our staff around the clock. There's no answering machines. There's no telephone answering service. Qualified and very experienced people are here at all times.
My question, are the people who are the volunteers, are they specialized in any particular field themselves as far as jobs or vocations, or are they just people who are interested in UFOs?
Well, they've all got a great interest in and background in the subject. We have a physicist, and there's a professional astronomer, and we have an MD, and then there's a couple people associated with electronics, and the rest are just ordinary laymen.
How about yourself? What do you do?
No, I'm retired.
Can I get your name?
No, I'd rather not. Just a member of the staff.
Okay, then I can just say that you're one of the people who man the phones on a regular basis, huh?
Right.
Okay, good enough. Do you have any records on the number of calls you have gotten from Northern California over the years today? Maybe I should ask you this. How large an area do you get calls from?
Oh, just the West Coast primarily, you know.
Do they come in, do you have any way of knowing about how frequent the calls from Northern California are in comparison to other areas?
Well, I couldn't give you a definite answer. Let me put it this way, that we probably have more calls, since the center has opened, I'll say, we've had more calls from Northern California than any other area of the West.
Yeah. Does that mean anything to you,
Well, we've gone over that quite a bit, and there's been some personal interpretations. Some people feel that it could have something to do with many of the air bases down there, and then there's a theory that they may be watching, or a certain faction of these vehicles may be watching the earthquake fault zones. There's all kinds of theories.
Information and pass it on to our readers.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, thank you very much.
You bet.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.